section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
Yeah, this is Leon Felder snatch up in this bitch. And you're listening to White Trash Revival, yeah. I'd rather be listening to some motherfucking R&B. But Donnie fucking Cash paid me a 20 spot to do this intro up in here. Anyway, that punk motherfucker ain't gonna be on this motherfucking show. So now you punk bitches know. Anyway, this show's gonna be carrying the Queen of White Trash. And it's gonna feature Bob Long, whoever the fuck that is. You know what I'm saying?
Is it, you're on a tour right now?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, are you in the middle of it at the beginning, the end?
More towards the past the middle.
Okay.
It's 34 shows or something in 34 days.
All right.
So
where did it start?
I don't know where I am. It started in Oklahoma City.
Is that where you live?
No. I live in Melbourne, Australia.
Okay.
I flew to Arizona because that's where I'm from and hung out there for 2 months, did a couple little tours. Southern California, then up the West Coast, back to Tucson each time. And then my family went back to Australia, and I started the big tour.
Okay. How did you end up in Australia?
A woman.
Okay.
That's the only reason anyone moves anywhere, I
think.
Right,
right. And so do you have kids there, too?
I have a daughter.
Okay.
In Australia.
All right.
Yes.
So that's home now, but originally home was Tucson.
Tucson. Well, I was actually born in Chicago, but I left when I was four. But my home is Tucson, Arizona.
Okay.
But
your parents are there?
Well, my dad is.
Okay.
My sister's in L.A. My other sister's in Phoenix. But my dad's in Tucson, and that's kind of where I mostly played music growing up and how it all started and everything. So Tucson's my home.
Tucson's your home?
Yes. But I live in Melbourne, Australia now. And I eat kangaroo meat.
Do you for real?
Yeah. Yes, we do.
It's like all natural, organic, or
just like steak. Oh, you wouldn't even know it if someone didn't tell you.
Really?
Yeah. It's pretty good, and you can do it all kinds of ways. You can have burritos, ravioli.
So, yeah, that's gross. That sounds kind of veal-esque, you know, because you're talking about roux, which always makes me think of, like, Winnie the Pooh.
Well, but, people eat that, too, probably, but I've never eaten bear. Don't let me forget that. Okay.
Oh, I won't. Sorry, that's still cracking me up. So, are there like kangaroo farms, or is it more?
No, I think they just run out in the forest and shoot a couple and eat it for dinner. I don't think there's kangaroo farms. There's so many that, but there maybe there is.
Like
I don't know.
Deer here.
There's deer farms though. I've seen deer farms, but I've never seen or heard of a kangaroo farm. I think they just got so many. You know, there's nothing there to kill them. So, you know, not even the dingoes can kill a kangaroo. A kangaroo will grab a dingo by the head and dunk it underwater and drown it. They're too smart, so there's nothing to kill them, except
makes
now
me think
people
of the dingo
eat them.
Ate my baby.
That's dingoes. What,
whenever you say that, I think of that.
Yeah. I still haven't seen that movie. I'm going to have to see that.
Yeah.
Apparently my wife's in it when she was 12 years old.
Oh, really?
Held up to a fence. I'm going to have to see that someday.
Really? Yeah. She's in it. That's so interesting. So how did you meet her?
I played a big festival in Melbourne, and the booking agent who brought me had her and her partner dance with me while I played a song. And I thought it would just be some cute little dance, but it was so funny and strange that I couldn't hardly play the song. They do like little 3-minute ballet cartoons.
Okay.
Stories. It's a story that's
okay.
3 minutes long, and they're fucked up. Yeah, so it was so funny I brought him on tour with me.
That's great.
In the States. And
that's
now
great.
And have a baby.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So just how does having the baby change things for you? Do you feel like different? Do you feel enriched? Do you feel challenged?
It's the greatest thing I ever did. I love it. It's fantastic. A 3-year-old girl's like having a little midget on acid follow you around all day and tell you what to do.
Yes. Okay, I like that. That's a great quote.
And
very accurate.
It's actually hilarious all the time, even when you're tired. It's hilarious. But she's almost big enough to carry my amp, so pretty soon she'll be on tour.
She'll be like a little workhorse.
She'll be my roadie.
Good. That's good. Questions. This is kind of off of your family, but what is the story with the helmet? Where did you come up with that?
Oh my God. Everybody knows this story.
I don't know the story. I want to hear your story, your version of it. Like,
it's the same story I always tell. I don't have to lie. It's the truth. I was on tour with Ween, and I was in a band called Do-Rag, and my drummer decided he'd had enough of touring. And I had a choice to either go home or go to the show and make some noise. And I was in Lawrence, Kansas. And the day before, I'd bought a helmet in a thrift store because I have a trike at home. I have a 3-wheeled motorcycle.
Okay.
So I didn't know what to do. I'm like, do I want to go home? And this had happened before. And I was in Lawrence, Kansas, and one of my heroes, Eugene Chadbourne, was playing at Love Garden Records there. And Eugene Chadbourne is this guitar god on the insane side, who can play banjo or guitar like better than you've ever heard, but then he'll also get on stage and for 40 minutes have a broom with a single string on it and play it with a wind-up ladybug. Do you know Eugene Chadmore?
I don't, but no. The wind-up ladybug is fascinating.
He will blow your mind with one string on a broom and a wind-up ladybug.
Wind-up ladybugs, like what kind, like a toy, you mean?
Toy,
like a children's
anything.
Toy?
Anything. He will pick up anything and blow your mind with it. He is this musical fucking genius.
Okay.
Anyway, so I saw him play for 40 minutes on a broom with a single string, and he had his daughter with him who was helping him sell stuff and was his roadie.
Okay.
And I said, I know how to play guitar good enough to entertain people for 40 minutes by myself. So I called Ween, and I said, hey, Ween, Thermos went home, but I'll come to the show tonight, and I'm looking around the car, and I'm like, I'll kick my guitar case, and I'll put a helmet on my head. And they're quiet for a second. Okay. So then I drove to Chicago, pulling over constantly, trying to figure out songs that I could kick along to, because I'd never, ever in my life considered being a one-man band before that moment.
Okay.
And I had 8 hours till showtime. So I was basically panicking, like, if you're a mom, and a bus drives over your baby, and you pick the bus up off the baby, it's like that kind of panic. So I
had, right, it's an had adrenaline rush.
I had that kind of adrenaline rush that whole tour, basically, but especially that day. And I drove to Chicago, and I set up, and I didn't, you know, I had like 5 songs I'd made up on the way there, and I got this drum machine. And I did have a drum machine I used on a couple songs. It was one I'd used my fingers with. And I played this 45-minute show, and people went ballistic, and a girl took me home and fucked me all night in her friend's closet. And I said, I'm going to do that again. And I woke up the next day, and Ween was like, that was great. Come to Detroit. So I did the rest of the tour I was supposed to do.
So this all was really with Ween. That's so interesting. I didn't know about the Ween connection.
Ween could have said, no, Bob, go home. Mm-hmm. And they were cool enough to let me do it. And every night I would figure out something else. And every night, because I was still on this, you know, lift the bus off the baby mode. So every night I'd figure out a little bit more. Yeah, and they were really cool about it. It was funny because it was their country tour, so they were in a dressing room with 12 people. They had all the old guys with them.
Right.
And I was, you know, in the same size dressing room by myself.
And all alone, and you were
they'd
like...
have 20 beers, I'd have 20 beers. They had 7 sandwiches, I had 7 sandwiches.
That's
people
hilarious.
Come up like, can I hang out in here and have a sandwich? I'm like, yeah.
You're like, yeah, I have room.
Yeah, come on in.
So that's where the helmet came from.
And then how did you
figure out the attaching the phone thing to the front of the...
Well, that tour, thing. I didn't really attach it so well. I just duct taped it inside the bubble mask.
Right.
With some duct tape. But when I got home, I tried to make a hole in it. Forget how I did it the first time, but it didn't work out so good. But then I found, I said, okay, I need to drill a real hole in the bubble mask. So I was like, I went to the hardware store and I found a doorknob size drill.
Right.
I said, that looks close enough. Let's just give it a whirl. So I drilled this hole out in my bubble mask with the doorknob drill, and the phone fits in like it was made for it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that was a really momentous day in my life when I figured out that the doorknob hole dude and the phone dude were probably roommates, and it really has helped me out.
I think so. I think that's entirely possible.
Yeah, that was nice. It made my life so much easier.
And so how did even coming up with the idea of, I mean, the helmet was really just the fact that you picked it up. It wasn't like something that connected back to
I rode motorcycles
else.
My whole life, but okay. There was one in the car, and I had 8 hours till showtime, and I didn't know
and
what
so
I was going to do.
Just, okay.
That's it. It was in the car. I'd already been singing in a telephone with Do-Rag.
Okay.
Telephones, I used to use telephones to use as a guitar pickup. I would just tape a telephone mic, not the whole telephone,
right.
The mic to my guitar, and record it. Chunked and Muddled that way, Do-Rag's first record. I think there's an amp on a couple songs in there, but it's mostly just, that's a telephone mic'd guitar and telephone vocals. But what I found was that if you're playing big shows, like Open for the Cramps, and you plug your telephone mic guitar into a giant PA, you're going to see 800 people looking in utter horror at you, because it sounds, unless the sound guy's really nice to you, a telephone mic guitar is not going to sound good really loud in a room full of 800 people. So I started using guitar pickups and the telephone sound as well. So now I have a regular sound and a chinky 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 on the guitar.
Chinky.
It's like Johnny Cash. You got Johnny and Luther. Johnny plays acoustic and he goes chinky chinky chinky, and Luther's playing the low part that's going wow 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 wow. So I do both of those at the same time.
At the same time, yeah. You do, yeah.
And then I do drums with my feet, real drums, and I got a drum machine I can turn on and off whenever I want. There's no like set thing. And then the other drum machine that if I step on at the right moment, I can sync it up with the other drum machine, so then I can sound like three drummers and two guitar players. That's what I'm trying to do. Not every song all the way through, but at certain points in certain songs, that's the goal. But so, most songs, some songs I just sound like one drummer, one guitar player, but most songs I sound like at least like two guitar players and one or two drummers. Mostly two drummers, I guess. And then sometimes three and sometimes one.
Is to do this alone. I mean, you never thought to yourself, okay, well, it didn't work out with the first band, and I'm going to go ahead and do a second like band with somebody else. I mean, because you keep talking about this as if you're trying to sound like more people than yourself, which is a really interesting kind of Jim Henson-esque thing. Like, you know, Jim Henson could be Jim Henson, and he could have all of these people that he kind of was when he did like his Muppets and Puppets.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I love
getting that.
Do you know that song? Would you like to buy an O? Circular,
yes.
And neat.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Silent E.
The impetus for me for everything is to play guitar.
Okay.
That's all I've ever wanted to do since I was 11 years old is to play guitar. I've been in bands before Durag. When my drummer left, the idea of getting another drummer was ridiculous.
Okay.
If you've ever heard Durag and you've heard how that man plays the drums, you would understand why getting another drummer was not an option.
Interesting.
That is not, it's just, no, he was too amazing and unique, and that'd be like if the Jimi Hendrix band replacing Jimi Hendrix or something. You just couldn't do it, you know.
Okay.
It's not gonna happen. And I had no one else with me, and I had 8 hours till showtime.
Right.
But then I got good at it. I'm not opposed to playing with other people, but the advantage of playing guitar songs you love by yourself is that you can always play them whenever you want for the rest of your life.
That's
and you don't
true.
Need somebody else to show up to do it.
Right.
I've written a lot of songs that I don't ever want to not be able to play because someone else ain't showing up.
Right.
And that's the impetus for me is to play guitar every single day. And if that's by myself or with someone else or with a band, great. But as long as I'm playing guitar, I'm happy, so that's what I do.
When did that desire start? I mean, at what point in your life, how old were you when you were like, well, I think I need to do this forever?
I was 11 when I got my first AC/DC record on 8-track.
On 8-track.
8-track.
How old are you?
40.
Okay, me too. So, yeah, I get exactly
40's good.
Yeah.
Everything still works if you know where all the buttons are now.
Exactly.
I'm down with 40.
Yeah, 40 is good. I have no complaints on 40.
So, yeah, when I was 11, it was...
I know exactly what AC/DC 8-tracks I think I have the same one.
That's what I
want to
do.
So, yeah.
That's what I'm going to do. And okay. I think a lot of people have those moments, maybe. I mean, it took me a while to get there, but I never stopped thinking that that was in any way something I wasn't going to do.
You were raised by your father or both parents? I mean, like,
I lived mostly, it was both. My parents were divorced, but I'd go to the weekends to my dad's house, and then every once in a while I'd be kicked out of my mom's house after living at my dad's house.
Right. Sure, I'm kicking my own kid out right now. So it happens.
Yeah, 14. Sometimes it happens.
I call him Ass Dan. I'll explain that to you later, but it has to do with... it's like a Saturday Night Live skit that's making fun of the Juggalos, the gathering of the Juggalos. Do you know what that is? Insane Clown Posse has this like festival every year. Anyway, there's this Saturday Night Live skit, and they have this character named Ass Dan, and I call him that because he's in that 14-year-old phase where I'm like, yeah, I love you, and I want you to live here, but I might need to kick your ass out. Piss me off. So I get what you're saying. So, all right, so did your dad play music, or your mom, or?
Yeah, my dad plays piano. Does kind of funny country tunes, and when I was a kid,
the humor thing was like, I mean, because
he didn't really play shows when I was a kid. He did once though. He put the piano in the back of the pickup, drove to the local bar, and would open the door and play songs into the bar. But his whole point was people would buy him drinks just to shut up.
Just to shut up.
Yeah. So it's like if you buy him a drink, he'll stop playing. And so he did that a few times. But since I've been playing around, he's actually been recording, and I've had him open for me a few times in Tucson. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
But he just always loved music, and you know, he introduced me to Screamin' Jay Hawkins when I was just a little kid.
Really?
And he loved Lightnin' Hopkins and the Coasters, all kinds of fun stuff that, you know, you learn a lot from your dad from music. At least I did.
Yeah.
That's where I probably learned most of the fun music from.
So then he wasn't opposed to you doing, I mean, when you said, oh, I just really want to play guitar, I mean, nobody was like, no, really, you need to go to dental school.
Not really. No, they pretty much, no, I don't remember anything like that. I just did what I wanted to. I guess I didn't ask anybody.
All right.
I was doing other things, too, you know. I was a movie projectionist for 8 years in Tucson for a art cinema. And so all I'd have to do is thread the projector, turn off the lights, start the movie, and then play guitar for 2 hours. And then like, oh, the movie's over. I better turn the lights on. Oh, I got to re-thread it up. Okay, there's people inside. Okay, I'll turn the lights off. I'll start the movie. Now I'll play guitar. That was a great job.
It sounds like a great job.
Yeah. But then they were cool. And when I started touring with Durag, they were like, yeah, go, come back. So for a while there, I was doing touring and that job. But I don't know, I guess about 1995, touring took over, and I just done that since.
Since 1995.
I've toured before then, but that was the last time I worked.
Like you had like a wage job.
Yeah.
Interesting. this is like the classic kind of interview question, but who would you consider to be your influences? I mean, musically, AC/DC, I heard you say, Screamin' Jay Hawkins. I mean, your dad, but
Mississippi Fred McDowell and Superman.
Superman.
Yeah.
With the whole kryptonite music?
No, not kryptonite. What? Just doing shit that no one should be able to do.
All right.
You can't jump over a building. Oh, yeah? Watch me. Okay. I love a challenge, Ken. I love a challenge.
Okay, good. So, Boobscotch, just like a way of getting the audience involved, or is this like something that is a particular...
You want to know how Boobscotch happened?
Yeah, I do.
It was a cry of pain. People say, Bob Log, you never write a sad blues song. The thing is, I just write the songs about what makes me feel better. I was going through a real rough patch, and I was in Denver, and I didn't want to go back to Tucson, and this girl was talking to me, and she said, anyway, when my dad was a kid, he said they used to hide in the shower, and you'd take a cup in the shower with you when you were taking a shower at PE class at school, and all the other guys were there. You hold the cup under your balls, and you collect a cup of what they called ball water.
Okay.
And then you hide outside the door, and when someone's all clean and dried off, you throw it in their face and go, ball water, and then run away.
Okay.
And then I was with this girl, and I told her I wanted some of her boob water because I was hot, and I wanted to put it on the back of my neck.
Okay.
And she said, if you stay another day, I'll put my boob in your scotch. And I just sat down in the utter implications of suddenly an idea to make me feel better. And then her and her friend ended up putting her boob in my drink all night. And we were at this bar, and like they're doing it, this other girl's doing it, these other people across the table are like, I want one of those. So then they're doing it, and then people are like, you try. So I, you know, put my balls in the drink, and no one would want to drink it. But what the funny was, when a girl put her boob in the drink, everyone wanted to take a sip.
Chicks
including
and dudes.
The other girls. It
right.
was like, there's no hair. It's nice. You know, no one's going to get hurt.
Right. A boob is
and
a really nice part of a body.
Everybody who took a sip smiled more than they were smiling before they took the sip. And I'm like, God damn it, I do feel better.
Well, good.
So that's what I write the songs about. It's ways to make you feel better. They're happy songs.
They are
Maybe
happy
sometimes
songs.
They come from something that hurt, but that's where I don't write about the shit that hurts. I write about the shit that makes you feel better, because
well,
too many people write about
you. You also make people laugh. I mean, I'm not saying you're a comedian, but you have that part of your persona. That,
I have
that
to
is...
say that most of my favorite music makes me laugh.
Hey, you got your boob in my scotch.
Stir it up.
spicy screaming Jay Hawkins with a bone through his nose, flipping a puff of magic smoke into a skull on a stick and screaming opera, I fucking crack up. Okay. And it's coolest music I ever heard, but I'm laughing my ass off. It's the same with AC/DC. The first time I went to see them, I was like 15, and it was the greatest sounding guitar I've ever heard, and it was so stupid and great that I was just laughing till my stomach hurt. It's so dumb, but it's great, and I love dumb and great.
Yeah.
There's a million ways to do it. Shit, even the Butthole Surfers, that was dumb and great and funny.
Yeah.
And kind of scary.
Yeah, and kind of scary, that's
but
true.
But you would laugh your ass off at a lot of that shit. Most of my favorite bands entertain me lots of ways. I love the music, but also I'm entertained by something else. And I guess I just never really got into dark, scary music because I never really, you know, if a musician's trying to scare me, I'm like, okay, little song boy, scare me with your lyrics. You know, it's like, come on. It's just funny. People, when I was a kid growing up, there was scary music. It was, you know, all about Satan. And now that's just funny because, you know, it's gangster rap now. You just get shot in the face instantly. It's not like you're going to go to hell in 50 years.
No, exactly. That's the truth.
So Satan music is just funny. Anything dark and scary in music, it's like, you don't scare me.
Okay.
Come on, singy song boy. Scare me.
So you wouldn't be a favorite of the emo set, and that's okay.
I don't know. Everyone can like whatever they want. I'm not telling people what to like or what not to like. I just like what I like, and I play what I like, and that's where I'm coming from.
All right.
I guess I like rooms full of happy dancing people, and that's where what I try to make everywhere I go.
So the inflatable raft is what? Where did that come from?
Why did I get in a boat and put it on top of people?
Yeah.
It seemed like a good idea.
Okay.
I did it probably 600 times and fell out of it in Sydney, and I haven't really done it since because it fucked up my Italian tour pretty bad, and I had to cancel 3 weeks of the next tour.
Because you were injured?
Yeah, they put the boat out on a bunch of girls. No offense to any ladies out there, but the girls, instead of holding me up, you know, protected their hair, and I just went down like a sack of bricks. And it was bound to happen soon. I don't blame those girls. It was bound to happen sooner or later. Every time I did it and I didn't get hurt, I was amazed. I'm like, wow, that I should be dead. You know what I mean? So out of 600 times, I only get hurt once, and I fell out one other time, but it wasn't a big deal. It was just funny.
But you did get hurt that one time, so you decided
that one time, yeah. I didn't hurt at the time, but over the next week, and I had to fly to Italy, and then I'm driving to the show, and it's like, man, I can't move my arm so good. And each day it was getting worse. Usually I can play through shit, and it starts getting better, but that was just getting worse and worse. And I played all the shows, but, well, that was tough. So, yeah, and that's, again, anything that's going to get in the way of my guitar playing, I'm going to have to let it go. So the boat had to go for a while. And so if there's a perfect room and I got the boat, I will do it. The room's got to be totally solid. People, though, where the boat, if it's going to fall, they're not going to let me fall.
They're not going to let you fall. Yeah. Okay. Well, that kind of relates to the stage diving thing.
It's safe stage diving. I'm just in a boat and I turn the crowd into my ocean and they just better not drop me. But it was fun. I had a few really long rides. I had a couple short ones. Once they tried to put me up in a ceiling fan in Phoenix.
Do you have siblings?
I got two sisters. And a half-sister and a stepbrother. And a slew of ex-stepbrothers and ex-stepsisters that I don't really know.
Okay. When you were growing up, were you the oldest or the youngest? Or
I was the oldest, and then when my dad got remarried, I had an older stepbrother. And but yeah, my immediate family, I'm the oldest of my two sisters.
I ask that because my father is a middle child, and he built a raft and put his brother on it to test the raft and pushed him out into a river. And so that's what I was kind of thinking of wondering if there was something that had happened to you.
No, nothing like that. It's just another way to see how much the crowd loves me.
Okay.
Are you going to drop me? No, you're not. You love me.
But girls love their hair more.
Well, those girls did. Not all of them. Just those girls. I deserved it. After all that time, it was high time I fell out of that boat. It should not have lasted as long as it did. But it was fun while it did.
It was fun.
Mm.
Yeah. of doing anything different coming up? Any side projects? Anything?
People always ask me that stuff.
You don't plan?
I do plan, but I plan to play guitar every day, and I kind of like what I've created. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I need to change a goddamn thing.
Okay.
I think there's so many like, oh yeah, next we're going to do a reggae album. If AC/DC ever did that, I'd go shoot them personally. Same with Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley. It's like, just do what you do. I love bands that get good at one thing. They get really, really good at one thing. When bands start going over here and over there, you know, maybe some people want that, but, you know, all I'm saying is I'm glad AC/DC never did a reggae album. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that brand's dead.
If you are a reggae band, sure, do the reggae. But if you're AC/DC, don't jump off the AC/DC wagon and do something that we don't want to hear. Do what we love you for. And if you love it yourself, you know, if you're a musician and you're sick of your shit, then yeah, you're going to start doing side projects and changing your style. But I love my style, and I don't want to mess with it at all. I love what I do, and I'm going to do it every single day.
I saw a video of you with some tractors. I can't remember where it was. You were in some tractor, like the tractors were pulling you.
There was a festival in France, and they had tractors that pulled the bands, and they can only do it with small bands, so I was perfect. The only problem with playing on the back of a tractor is the beat of the song is now the motor of the tractor, which I can play along with, but it sort of sucks when it's all day.
Yeah.
Like, all right, this song got this beat too, everybody, because there was just no competing with that tractor beat. But it was a good beat, so I didn't mind it too much. I like playing in weird places, and some clubs know that, and they'll go out of their way to give me something weird to play on because I'm a one-man band and I can fit in the ladies' room, or I can fit in the...
You've played in the ladies' room before.
Oh, many times. Or I can fit in, you know, on top of a car, or I can get pushed on a thing out on the stage and rolled out there. There's a lot of things you can do with a one-man band you can't do with a four-person band.
And people have come to you with those ideas, or they've just sort of sprung up? I mean, people have contacted you and said, we really want you to play in the ladies' room?
They had to hire the tractor and plan it all out. It wasn't a spontaneous tractor at the show.
Right.
You know, it doesn't work like that. Well, there's been times when I've just run to the ladies' room to play, or that it's actually set up that way, actually, because the club owner heard about that and thought it was funny.
That's sort of a collaborative aspect to what you do, that you work with the club owners on?
Well, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes some club owners want to do something weird, and if it's weird, I'm usually obliging.
Okay.
Getting in the boat was my own idea. I didn't talk to anybody about it. Getting girls to sit on me was my own idea. Sometimes some people in clubs have ideas too, though, I guess, yeah, if that's what you're asking.
So the girls sitting on you, that was, I mean, the Put Your Shit on My Leg song, that was another idea, kind of like Boobscotch, I mean, to get the audience involved. This isn't something that girls did themselves initially.
No, it was an idea I had in the car after being in the car for 10 hours, which is actually where I have most of my ideas. After you've driven 10 hours, you start getting a little weird. And I was like, how can I make tonight more fun? How can I make tonight more fun? That's the question I ask myself a lot. And what can I do to just up this fun level just one more notch? There was a girl on that tour who, someone wanted her to whip me like I was a wild animal playing the fastest song in the world, which didn't go over so well. I didn't like that.
Okay.
But then I thought, I'll have someone sit on me instead. And so that's what I started doing. And really, it's also a way for me to, I like to sweat. I think people have the most fun when they're actually sweating
okay.
for something.
It's good that you're bringing that up, because I want to ask you something.
Sweat's important, and AC/DC sweat a lot, and all I wanted to do was figure out a way to sweat as much as Angus, which I'll never be able to do, but I'll get as close as I can. And what helps me is, you know, a really hot suit, a girl sitting on me, a helmet on my head, and playing the fastest song in the world for an hour and 15 minutes.
So the suit, I mean, where did you come up with the suit?
I didn't invent wearing suits, for God's sakes.
Well, no, but
people
it's kind
been
of a spandexy looking stretchy fabric
people
thing.
People have been wearing spandexy stretchy suits since before I was born. I'm just another guy in a suit on stage. Shit, who's been wearing suits? Chuck Berry wore suits. Everybody wears suits.
Yeah, but not quite like yours. I mean, yours are kind of Evel Knievel-ish with the helmet and everything.
I guess maybe they look a little different, but it's just a suit. It, you know, you're getting on a stage and you're entertaining a room full of drunk people. Guitar comes first, as always. If you don't have the songs, you're not going to get hired in the first place. But now that you're here, what are you going to do? Are you going to sit there and be boring, or are you going to entertain a room full of drunk people? That's what rock and roll is about.
Right.
I mean, you can... I just don't understand how people don't understand that. I grew up watching Chuck Berry. He did a duck walk. Why?
Yeah, why?
Does it make the song sound better?
No, he
does
didn't.
A suit make the song sound better? No. Does someone sitting on your knee make the song sound better? Definitely not. Does a helmet make the song sound better? Well, actually, I do like the sound of the helmet. I wouldn't want it any other way. But if it was just the mic, helmet, does it matter? Does it make the song sound better? No. That's the rock and roll part is making people jump and scream and smile and dance and do shit that they wouldn't normally do when they're at work.
That's so what that part is really important to you.
Well, I guess I just don't understand it any other way. It's not that it's important. I just don't see getting on stage and being boring as a valid way to go around the world and have a good time.
I understand what you're saying. I think though that there's this kind of approach of some performers that they feel like they are there to do their thing, and their thing is to play music, and you are supposed to kind of accommodate that. But you seem to have the approach that's like you're a bit more accommodating, you're a bit more willing to entertain than to feel like people need to mold. I saw somebody performing recently and people were talking during a slow song and he stopped.
Yeah,
and said it's a one-man band, and he was like, I'm not playing this anymore because you people are talking. Well, and he went and played something else, and I was like, interesting. You know, I mean, I was quiet. I was the one talking, so I didn't feel guilty. But, you know, it is sort of that thing where you're like, that's interesting that he...
It just depends on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to play some serious songs to a room full of drunk people who don't really like you, they're probably going to talk over you, you know? And if that's going to upset you, then you got the wrong job, or you need to refigure or go play, you know, I don't know. And I got no problem with what anybody else does, you know? However you want to do it. I just grew up with liking fun music and fun, entertaining shows. That's what I liked. That's what I wanted to do. The music comes first, absolutely. When you take my CD home, you don't see the helmet or the suit or the girl sitting on me. It's the music, and that's all you're getting. And if the music's not good enough, you can't go do all this other stuff. You know, you can't just get up there and... It's not the same thing. All the other stuff is just extra. The music is first, but everything else that's extra is there because I like it and it's fun, and that's what I grew up liking.
Right.
I never really analyzed it so much, Karen. You're talking circles around stuff that I just do because it's fun.
Well, no, it's fine, and I'm really just asking you to reflect on things that maybe you haven't reflected on. It's okay. I mean, there's no pressure. I'm just curious about it all and how you put it all together. Mm. I mean, you know, when I told people that you were coming to town and that I wanted to interview you, they're like, well, damn, you're kind of a... You know, I don't want to say an oddity, but people are completely curious about you. I mean, like, I didn't know who you were. I said to the guy who was working, selling the wristbands, I'm like, all right, well, I need to find Bob, and I don't really know where he is, because there's no pictures of you like this. I mean, you're always with the helmet. My friend Sebastian that lives in Munich has, like, a whole portfolio of great photos of you from, I guess, when he saw you in Germany. I think that's where he saw you.
They're not that long ago.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, I can use Sebastian's photos for this interview. I can pair them up. But, you know, yeah, you're... So I was completely curious about how that all came together for you. You know,
it's
all
right.
And I didn't.
I just don't know how to explain it. It's like, it's almost like asking someone how they got their accent. It's just, that's where you grew up and how you grew up. You know, it's like, I didn't really think about talking like this. That's just how I talk.
Right.
And it's just the way it is. But yeah, I love doing it. I'm never going to quit.
Since the original?
No, we've emailed a few times. They're good guys. They're fantastic guys.
They're going to be in Columbus on Saturday, I know.
Well, tell them I said hi if you see them.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, but... So, yeah, they're... And that was... You haven't toured with them, though, since that original?
No. I tour with bands. You know, bands bring me on tour because they think it's fun, and I have a great time, but I like doing my own tours mostly. But I do like opening for bigger bands every once in a while.
Yeah.
It's good to go do some giant shows and play for a bunch of people who don't know you, and it's not your party, so you can cause as much trouble as you want to.
So where's, like, the strangest place that you've played, or the most unusual show?
Really, almost every show is strange and unusual.
Okay.
There's nothing normal about this life.
Sure.
Every day is a bunch of crazy drunk people, and if I'm going to get attacked by some Brazilian widow, or... A fat guy in a wheelchair is going to clap his tits together, or someone's going to steal my wallet and I end up having to go to the detective precinct of New York. You know, there's something weird happens every day. But one strange place I played was a deaf school in London, or not in London, but in England, in Newbury.
A deaf school.
A deaf kid's school was surrounded by bunnies in the forest. And there were professors and deaf children. I'm not making this up at all. And they brought me, honest to God, a silver platter of Doritos.
You're totally making that shit up. I don't have to make up anything, Karen. A silver platter of Doritos?
You should come with me on tour sometime. I would love that.
Oh, my God. I'm, like, totally loving
that. That was the day after playing the 100 Club in London, which is, like, this punk rock icon club.
Right.
And the next day, I'm, like, in the country with bunnies and deaf children. And I'm just like, what? What's going on? And the guy that booked it was just like, I get to book 6 shows a year at this theater for this school, and I just pick 6 things I love, and I just force it on the local population. So it was kind of like this one dude just was a fan, and he happens to be in charge of this theater.
So tell me what the Dorito connection is then.
Well, I had something on my rider. I don't know what it said. It's probably snacks or something. So that's what they came up with. The guy was just funny. It's like, I brought you some Doritos, and it's on this silver platter, because it was a fancy school. It wasn't for no poor deaf kids. That was rich deaf kids.
That's hilarious.
It was like an estate.
Doritos. Did you eat them all?
No, I ate some of them. I don't eat a whole bunch of shit before I play. I can only eat some things. I'll eat after.
That's funny.
It's a sport, what I do. I'm running in place for 1 hour and 10 minutes, and, I mean, as well as music. It's a sport. I kind of have to take care of myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I still get to drink a couple beers here and there, but I can't get crazy too much before the show. During the show, people buy me drinks, and during the show, I feel like I'm invincible, so I can drink anything and get through it. But sometimes I got to be more careful than other nights, depending on what people are buying me. They start buying me chartreuse, I'm in trouble.
What is chartreuse?
Oh, you don't even want to know. It's terrible.
I've never heard of that, and I'm like kind of well schooled in alcohol. I don't know what that is. That's like a bright green colored something,
it
right?
It is, yeah. You got something to experiment with now, but be careful.
What is it?
It'll make you wild.
Really?
Yeah. Be careful of chartreuse. And it's real hard to drink that and then start jogging again. On your stool.
Oh my God. So has your family come with you on tour at all? Like your daughter and
my
your daughter, wife?
Yeah. My daughter, my wife has. My sisters have. My sister and my sound guy were my opening band for a long time. The band I'm touring with right now are friends of mine from high school.
Really?
And I usually bring some kind of opening band on the tour. And sometimes I go alone, though. I've been alone for like 35 days in Europe just driving around. But that's not true because I kidnap people for a couple days here and there.
Do you?
I try to.
Yeah, so you have some company for the drive and stuff.
If you're alone in the car for more than 10 days, you start talking in the windshield.
Yeah.
And things get weird, and you end up painting a face on a coffee cup and gluing hair to it and giving it spoons for hands and naming it Consuela.
Consuela, yeah. Not Wilson.
No, I name her Consuela.
It's always a lady.
Yeah, it's a lady. And she's always trying to hug me with her spoon hands.
Spoon hands.
Yeah. That's what happens when you're alone in the car, too.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. I bet it just totally messes with your head.
It can. But it's then you also start thinking of songs, too. So in some ways, you got to go there. But other ways, like, I've had enough of there. I don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah, you need some people around.
Well, there always is at the end of every day. Because, you know, when I show up, there's a sound guy, there's the club, there's the people. I have a good time, but yeah, all day.
You know. Now, do you often stay in hotels? Or do you stay with people?
Okay. A little bit of both. It depends. More towards the end of tour, you know, anytime you can take a nap, you do. But it's hard. You can't do that at people's houses because they want to show you all their stuff.
Oh, really? That's interesting. What's the strangest thing somebody's shown you?
Oh, I can't legally say.
Okay. Dead bodies.
No, nothing like that.
People could.
No, I love staying at people's houses. I do it a lot. I really do. But yeah, I'm 40 now. Sometimes I need my nap.
You need your nap.
Well, you do what I do every night, 40 nights in a row, and see who else is napping.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody's napping. I'm sure. this is a kind of strange, well, it's not a strange question, it's kind of a typical question, but when you are performing and you're writing songs, you've sort of said this already, but do you have a particular audience that you feel like you're writing for, or do you write for yourself and hope
myself.
That the crowds appreciate what you're...
The songs aren't all funny. Some of them are. What happens?
No, I know they're not all.
I make a guitar part that I love. That's what I do. And I'm like, this is fun to play. And I don't play it for a while. And I just walk around playing it. And then I'll start kicking a beat to it. If I feel like it. Some songs don't even have drum beats. But then eventually, if it needs a drum machine beat, I'll try that out. And then the lyrics will come last, whatever they are. Whether it's, you know...
The lyrics are always last?
Shake a little, wiggle it, and wiggle it too. Yeah, the lyrics are always last. Lyrics, guitar is always first. Everything else is second, third, fourth, fifth. It's always guitar first. Fun on guitar, and then whatever happens after. And when I come up with a guitar part, it doesn't make me laugh. It's not... That's not where the funny thing is.
No, sometimes. No, no. I meant that you hope that they'll appreciate your humor, but when you're writing for yourself is what you're saying.
I write songs I love. That's it. And if I don't love it, it won't turn into a song. But it's a guitar thing. It's all about guitar, and everything else comes later.
Always.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Guitar. That's what I do. I'm a guitar player. Everything else comes after that.
Have you ever been without your guitar for a period of time?
Oh, sometimes, yeah. I have to put it down every once in a while. I actually, the way to get to learn shit sometimes is to not play it for 8 days and then pick it up and do something, and you do something you've never done before.
Why 8 days?
Oh, it doesn't have to be specifically 8 days. However many amount of days, but if you don't wait long enough, you won't forget everything you know. But you don't forget everything, you just don't do the same thing. Just one way to learn a new trick.
Huh.
But no, I'm not normally without my guitar for extended periods. If I'm not playing it, it's right there. I've never been without a guitar at all that I can think of.
And
unless it's like I'm in transit or my guitar got lost in the airport. That's happened.
Has that happened?
Mm-hmm. I've been touring for like 17 years. It's happened a few times.
And so have you ever had to make do with someone else's guitar?
Yeah, sure I have. I prefer not to, but one time I had a great guitar that way, and another time I had one that wasn't so great. But, yeah. As long as I got a guitar, I can probably do something, but it's better if I have my guitar. Just like anybody that plays music on anything.
If it's your one and only that you know.
I would assume that's the same for violin players, flute players, and everything.
Well, is there anything else that you like to do as much as play guitar?
Well, of course.
Eat, sleep, and have sex.
Well, yeah, I mean, come on. No, this is what I want to do. I like to read. There's lots of things I like to do, but I wouldn't do it probably. I guess I can read more than I play guitar, technically, if you're going to add up all the hours.
What do you like to read? What?
Science. It's a
science.
Moment. I'm reading The Making of the Atomic Bomb by Richard Rhodes, which is a very, like, if you were a scientist, you could actually make a bomb, but it's how it was invented and all the, what each individual scientist did and everything they did wrong and everything when they got it right and then they got it wrong. It's fucking amazing.
Interesting.
What people can do.
That
I just read a whole book about the origins of salt. This book by Mark Kurlansky, it's just called Salt. It's
salt?
One of the most amazing. It's a book on the history of salt. And it is honestly
a huge selling,
you know what?
Like,
that's what I said. I was like, I'm not reading a book on salt, and it is page gripping amazing. I'm not even kidding you.
Really?
I'm not even gonna tell you. You know what I did? No, I'm not telling that story.
Did you try to make some salt?
No, but I'm telling you, that book's fantastic.
On salt.
Mm-hmm.
The Atomic Bomb, I get. It's kind of like the Anarchist Cookbook or whatever.
It's not even that. You know what it is? It's a thriller. It's a thriller. Because these guys, they're seriously trying to do this quickly because they think Germany's doing the same thing.
Right.
So it's like they're panicking. They're trying to lift the baby off the bus. But the end result isn't, you know, clap your tits. It's an atomic bomb. So it's a little bit different. But these guys are just completely panicking scientists. And And yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
I think Dayton has some of that history in it. I think in the town I live in Oakwood, which is a suburb of Dayton, and there's a part of it where they talk about there having been plutonium experiments being conducted because...
Yeah, Oakwood, that's in my book.
Is it really?
Yeah, that's where they were trying to make plutonium. It's right, it was right here.
Yeah, some of my friends who grew up right on that site all have cancer.
Yeah, it didn't work out so good.
No,
they didn't know what they were doing, you know? They didn't know what they were doing. It wasn't like, hey, we're going to give everybody cancer. They were working with something they didn't know how the fuck to make it.
No, absolutely, and they were in a hurry.
And they tried like five different ways, and I think the Oakwood one was one of the ones that didn't work in the long run. It worked a little bit, but yeah, that's right. I didn't realize that was right here.
It is right here.
Is that in Ohio?
It's right in Dayton.
Yeah,
it's just like, I'll say, about 2 miles south of here.
That's crazy. That's right at the part of the book I'm at. That's nuts.
Really? It's right here. That's kind of interesting, timing-wise, in terms... You like Mark Twain?
I love Mark Twain, but the sad part about Mark Twain is I've already read it all, but some things you can read again, and they're still hilarious. When Innocents Abroad, when he just goes over to Europe and just gives every European country shit, it's just an American in Europe in 1870 giving shit to everybody else's culture, and it is so goddamn funny.
I bet it is.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Do you read any fiction?
Very rarely. Okay. Occasionally I do, but not, I don't know, maybe about 8 years ago, and some people may hate me for this, but I realized that all fiction is just a pack of lies. And not that nonfiction isn't, too.
I was just going to say, now, come on, you're talking to a social scientist who's a post-positivist, so I would say, science is a lie, too.
Yeah, exactly, and there's lots of lies in history, and there's all kinds of lies everywhere, but, you know, fiction is just blatant, just a huge lie. But that, you know, lots of Mark Twain is kind of fiction, too, although most of the Innocents Abroad is, you know,
a tall tale
of what he really did.
Right.
But same thing. He's you know, he's making the stories more interesting. But yeah, I mostly read other things now. But I did read a book last year I loved that Pygmy by Palahniuk. Did you read that one?
No, but I know what book you're talking about.
It is one of the funniest books I've ever read. The entire book is in pidgin English. There's not one sentence in that book that is a sentence you've seen before.
Right.
Other than when the white kids are talking to the main character. So every once in a while there'll be like one sentence in English because someone American is talking. But the entire book is sentences you have never seen in your life. And
how
so
hard is that to read when you're like exhausted?
No, it's hilarious. You
really?
Sometimes have to read things two or three times, but it's so wrong and funny. And it's hilarious. I love it when anybody messes with the formula. Like, bands are supposed to be four people and they sing a love song and they do this. It's like, no, I don't. Boom. I'm a one-man band. I do crazy drums. I do crazy guitar. And same with books. I love it. Like Don Quixote. That's a book that was supposed to be found and you're reading the comments of the guy who found it. You know, it's just totally taking the formula of a book and turning it on its ass. And you can never turn that into a movie because it's such a book thing that it's never going to work. You can't film somebody writing about a book that he found and know what he's saying. You know, it's just not, it would never work. I love that. I love it when people take a medium and do it in a way that is just not how it's supposed to be done. There's lots of ways to do that.
And that's
lots
kind of
things.
And that's what you do with your music to a certain extent. So
pretty much.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we've covered just about all the territory I could think of. We could sit here all night, but I don't want to keep you from...
I better do my work, Karen. It's almost time to make the donuts.
I bet it is. Thank you so much, though.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you want to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has what you need. .com names as low as $1.99. Plus, world-class hosting, fast and easy website builders, and much, much more. Plus, when you enter the code POD149 when you check out, you'll save an additional 10% off your web hosting order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Some restrictions apply. See site for details.